Picture two airplanes converging over a quiet valley on a clear Saturday morning. Neither pilot is doing anything wrong. Both are legal, both are looking outside, both have every right to be exactly where they are. And in about 15 seconds, one of them has to give way, or they are going to meet in a place that was big enough for both of them right up until it wasn't. The question is simple. Who yields? I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern here on Radio Hangar. Today we are going to take one of the most important regulations in the entire rulebook, a reg that lives quietly in Federal Aviation Regulation 9113, and we are going to make it something you can actually use, not memorize for a test, use in the airplane on your next flight. Before we get into it, quick shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial, they've got you covered. It's a great way to mark the milestones that matter. And let me tell you, right-of-way rules are the kind of thing you learn on the way to earning one of those coins. AviationSoul.com? Okay, let's walk through this together. The rule we're talking about comes from the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, and it's titled Right-of-Way Rules Except Water Operations. Everybody just calls it the Right-of-Way Rules. And here's the thing I want you to understand before we even get into the specifics. Having the right-of-way does not mean you get to be stupid. The very first thing 9113 says before it says one word about who yields to whom is this. Regardless of who has the right of way, no pilot may operate an aircraft so close to another aircraft as to create a collision hazard. And it goes on. When one aircraft has the right of way, the other gives way, but the aircraft with the right of way shall maintain course and speed. Read that last part again in your head. The airplane with the right of way is supposed to hold what it's doing. Course and speed. Because the whole system only works if the other pilot can predict you. If both of you start jinking and dodging and second-guessing each other, you've turned a solvable geometry problem into a coin flip. So right-of-way is not a trophy. It's a job. The person who has it has the job of being predictable. The person who has it has the job of being predictable. The person who doesn't has the job of getting out of the way early, and obviously, here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. I spent so much energy trying to memorize who wins each matchup that I forgot the entire point of the rule is so that two human beings who can't talk to each other can agree on what's about to happen without saying a word. That's it. That's the whole reason this reg exists. Now let's build the hierarchy, because there is one, and it actually makes sense once you see the logic behind it. The FAA ranks aircraft roughly by how much control they have over their own situation. The less able you are to maneuver or go around, the more right-of-way you get. Think of it as the sky showing courtesy to whoever has the fewest options. At the very top of the list, an aircraft in distress. If somebody is having an emergency, they have the right-of-way over all other air traffic. Every time, no exceptions. Somebody declares, somebody's got a rough-running engine and they're diving for a runway, that airplane owns the sky, and everybody else works around them. That one's easy to remember because it's just human decency written into federal law. Now let's go down the ladder, and I want you to picture these in order of how helpless the aircraft is. Balloons are near the top. A balloon has the right-of-way over all other category aircraft because a balloon goes where the wind goes, it can climb and it can descend, and that is essentially the whole menu. You cannot ask a balloon to turn, so everybody yields to the balloon. Next down, gliders. A glider has the right-of-way over an airship, an airplane, or a rotorcraft. Why? Because a glider that's out of altitude is out of options. No engine, no go-around, no orbiting to wait their turn. If a glider is working to make a field, you get out of the way and let them work, then airships. A dirigible, a blimp, it yields to balloons and gliders, but it has the right-of-way over airplanes and rotorcraft. And then, at the bottom of that particular ladder, us airplanes and rotorcraft. The powered, maneuverable, go-around-and-try-again crowd, we yield to everybody above us, because we're the ones with the most ways out. But there's one more piece that jumps the line, and this is the one people forget. An aircraft towing or refueling other aircraft has the right-of-way over all other engine-driven aircraft. So a banner tow airplane, a glider on the end of a tow rope, an air-to-air refueling operation, those have the right-of-way over your ordinary powered traffic. Makes sense. You cannot ask an airplane dragging a 200-foot banner to maneuver aggressively. So the whole stack, top to bottom, distress. Then balloon, glider, airship. Towing operations jump ahead of ordinary powered traffic. Then airplanes and rotorcraft at the bottom. Here's a little trick I give my students. The less an aircraft can do to save itself, the more the rules do it for them. Balloons can barely steer, so they win. We can go around all day, so we yield. If you remember the logic, you don't have to memorize the list. The list falls out of the logic. Let's take a breath there, because that's the framework, and now we get to the part you'll actually use on almost every flight. Because most of the time, you're not going to meet a balloon or a blimp. You're going to meet another airplane. Airplane versus airplane. Same category. Now what? The reg gives us three scenarios, and these are the ones the examiner is going to ask you about, and more importantly, these are the ones that will keep you alive. Scenario 1, converging. Two aircraft of the same category are converging at roughly the same altitude, but not head-on. One's coming in from your side. The rule. The aircraft to the other's right has the right-of-way.
Let me make that real. You're cruising along and out your right window, off at your 2 o'clock. Another airplane is coming in on a converging path. That airplane is on your right, so that airplane has the right-of-way. You give way, you yield. Now flip it. The traffic is out your left window, your 10 o'clock, converging. You're on his right. You have the right-of-way. Your job now is to hold course and speed and let him solve it, while you keep your eyes glued to him in case he doesn't. Here's the memory hook that's helped more of my students than anything else. It's just like a four-way stop in a car. The guy on your right goes first. Traffic on your right has the right-of-way. Same instinct you already have from driving. Traffic on the right, you give way. And when you do give way in a converging situation, the reg tells you how. You alter course to the right and you pass behind the other airplane. Turn right, go behind. That way you're both turning in a predictable direction and you're steering toward the space behind him, which is the space that's opening up, not the space that's closing. Scenario 2. Approaching head-on. This is the scary one, because closure rates are brutal. Two airplanes doing a buck 20 each, that's 240 knots of closure, and that gap eats itself alive. Here there is no winner. Nobody has the right-of-way head-on. The rule says each pilot shall alter course to the right. Both of you turn right, you each break to your own right, you pass each other left side, and you slide by. It's exactly like two cars meeting on a road in a country that drives on the right. Everybody goes right, everybody passes clean, the trap here, and I've seen it, is the pilot who tries to be helpful and turns left, because that looks like the shorter way around. If you turn left while the other guy correctly turns right, you have just turned toward each other. Do not improvise this one. Head on, you turn right, always right. Burn that in. Scenario 3. Overtaking.
You're the faster airplane coming up behind somebody. Maybe you're in a slick retractable running down a training airplane in the pattern. The rule, the aircraft being overtaken has the right of way. The overtaking aircraft shall alter course to the right to pass well clear. The airplane in front owns the right of way because he probably doesn't even know you're back there. You're in his blind spot, behind and below, or behind and level, he can't see you. So the burden is entirely on you, the overtaking airplane, to move right, and give him plenty of room. And notice the direction again, right? Almost everything in this reg pushes you to the right, which is a beautiful thing, because under pressure you don't want to be running a decision tree. You want one instinct. When in doubt, ease it to the right. Now here's a special case that trips up more pilots than any other, and it's the one that matters most in the traffic pattern, which, given the name of this show, I am contractually obligated to care about. Landing. The reg says aircraft, while on final approach to land or while landing, have the right of way over other aircraft in flight or operating on the surface. So the airplane on final and the airplane touching down, they own it. Somebody's on final, you do not taxi onto the runway in front of them. You do not turn base to cut them off. They're landing, they win. But then comes the sentence that has caused 100 arguments on 100 CTAF frequencies. When two or more aircraft are approaching an airport for the purpose of landing, the aircraft at the lower altitude has the right-of-way. The lower aircraft has the right-of-way. And right behind it, the reg slams the door on the obvious cheat. It says a pilot shall not take advantage of this rule to cut in front of another, which is on final approach to land or to overtake that aircraft. So you cannot dive for the deck to steal the right-of-way. You can't see somebody on a nice, stabilized final, drop your airplane like a rock to get lower than them, and then claim you had the right-of-way because you were lower. The reg specifically forbids using the lower altitude rule to cut in or overtake. Being lower gives you the right-of-way honestly earned, not the right-of-way stolen by shoving your nose down. Let me give you a scenario. Because this is where it lives. You're on a 2-mile final at a non-towered field. Somebody announces they're turning base. They're higher than you, they're behind you on the sequence. Technically, you're on final, you're lower, you have the right of way. Good. Hold your approach. Make your calls. Be predictable. But the reg is not a license to be a jerk about it. If that other airplane is a faster twin and the geometry is getting ugly, the safe pilot, the one who lives to fly next weekend, is the one who says out loud on the radio, "I'll extend. You go ahead, I'll follow you in. You can be right and dead, or you can be flexible and alive." Every experienced pilot I know has, at least once, given up a right-of-way they legally owned because the other option was a fender bender at pattern altitude. That ties right back to where we started. The rule exists to make people predictable, and the smartest thing you can ever do when the predictability breaks down is talk, say your intentions. See and avoid is the law. But a few words on the radio turn a guessing game into a plan. Let's talk about how this shows up on your check ride, because I promised we'd make this useful. The right-of-way rules live in the airman certification standards under the regulations and airspace tasks, and the knowledge the examiner is checking for is exactly the three scenarios we walk through. Converging traffic on the right has it, turn right and pass behind. Head-on, both turn right. Overtaking the airplane in front has it, you move right to pass, plus the category hierarchy and the landing rules. Here's what the examiner is really looking for, though. It's not the recitation. Any applicant can memorize a list. The examiner is looking for whether you understand that having the right-of-way never relieves you of the responsibility to see and avoid. If you answer a right-of-way question and you never mention that you'd keep watching the other airplane, that you'd be ready to give way even when you don't have to, you've missed the point of the whole reg, and a good examiner will hear that. So when you get the question, answer the geometry, and then add the sentence that shows you get it. Something like, "And regardless of who has the right-of-way, I'm responsible for not creating a collision hazard, so I'm keeping that traffic in sight the whole time." That sentence is worth more than the whole list because it tells the examiner you'll be safe on a random Tuesday when there's no examiner watching. And that, honestly, is the real reason to know this cold. Not the check ride. The check ride is a day. This reg is every day. Mid-air collisions are rare, but when they happen, they overwhelmingly happen in good weather, close to airports, in the daylight, between two perfectly airworthy airplanes flown by two perfectly competent pilots who simply did not have a shared plan for the same piece of sky. Every one of those situations is the exact situation 9113 was written to solve. So, let me leave you with the version you can carry in your head, because if you remember nothing else, remember this. The airplane with the fewest options gets the right-of-way. Traffic on your right, you give way and you turn right and pass behind. Head-on, everybody turns right. Overtaking, you move right and give room. Landing, the lower airplane has it, but you never dive in to steal it. And over the top of all of it, right-of-way or not, your only real job is to not hit anybody. When in doubt, ease it to the right. Keep your eyes outside, and say what you're going to do. Today's breakdown came straight from the FAA's own Federal Aviation Regulation 91.1.13 and the check ride angle from the Airman Certification Standards. If you want the show notes, they're at radiohanger.com. Go fly, keep your head on a swivel, and I'll see you back in the pattern.